Everything is gold, everything is equal. Posted on the porch, just chilling, me and my people. Eyelids closed, gold sun shines on. The world's coated in a gold Krylon, yeah. And these days, they never run away. Gold tints, shades that block out that golden haze. Take all the gold from the pawn shop that lives behind the case. And give it away,
give it away, give it away.
When gold erupted from volcanoes in the heavens, and every shrine that existed in time melted. Tombs open, dookie ropes on the barrels. When everything is gold, who cares about the cats? They say the gold's the skin of the gods. You can't take the band-aid when you're gone. Tip over that kiosk in the mall as the sunset falls into tomorrow.
Today we're feeling like gold. 500,000 sold. Slick Rick gold. Rope on helicopter.
Hey, this is DJ Freak, and welcome to Oval Hour, pulling the rad facts straight from the White House on Wednesdays, 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. at radio.dominican.edu. Thanks for tuning in today, where we'll be discussing two presidents, William Henry Harrison and James K. Polk. My guest today is the lovely Alistair. How are you today, Alistair?
I'm doing fantastic. How about you?
I'm doing all right. That big history event, I missed a lot of it because I had work, but I got to the end, so I got to see a lot of projects. How was your experience with Big History Event?
It was definitely pretty fascinating. The cool displays and the cool performances by some of the students was quite awesome.
I know Mikey DJ'd, and were there other things that happened, like live things?
There was a dance performance by Aaron and Charlotte.
Ooh, whoa.
That was pretty cool. There was a drum performance by Syra.
Ooh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was. Our attention was hooked. Definitely.
I'm really upset. I missed it. I tried to get someone to cover my shift so I could go to it. I really wanted to see what we're up to. I'm not really sure what the actual gala was. I was a little confused at first, so I just kind of like did a project. What was your project? I never asked.
My project. I wrote a poem and colored the paper, and we had a big ohm symbol that kind of...
Oh, I saw it. I saw it. It was like the front one.
It was right there. Yeah.
That's cool.
You missed the best part, though. There was a photo booth.
I took a picture with my roommates, Justine and Nicole. We needed a roomie photo, and we thought that was the perfect idea.
We didn't get a photo together.
What?
We didn't get one.
That's the worst day ever. We should have got that done.
Yeah, we missed that opportunity.
We'll definitely take one. So how is your knowledge with presidents? No? Mm-hmm. All right.
I can name a few. I mean,
yeah.
I know that George Washington was our first one.
That's a good start.
That's a good start, right?
That's a great start. Some people don't even know that. Well, today we're going to talk about William Henry Harrison, and he was the 9th president of the United States, and an American military officer and politician, and the last president born as a British subject. He was also the first president to die in office. He was 68 years old and 23 days old when inaugurated, and he died on the 32nd day in office of complications from anemia. Basically, he died in office and he wasn't there very long. He is the shortest term ever in presidential history. But I mean, at least he was, you know, president. It could have been worse. You never president. At least he was president for a little bit. Like, it could have been way worse.
He did what he could.
He did what he could. Before election as president, Harrison served as the first territorial congressional delegate from the Northwest Territory, governor of the Indiana Territory, and later as the U.S. representative and senator from Iowa. He originally gained national fame for leading U.S. forces against American Indians at the Battle of Tippecanoe, I remember that, where he got his nickname, Old Tippecanoe. As a general in the War of 1812, his most notable action was in the Battle of the Thames, in 1813, which brought an end to the hostility in his region. The battle resulted in the death of an Indian Native American chief and the dissolution of the Indian coalition which he led. After the war, Harrison moved to Ohio, where he was elected to the United States House of Representatives. In 1824, the state legislature elected him to the U.S. Senate. He served a term after reappointing as the minister to Colombia in May of 1828. In Colombia, he spoke with Simón Bolívar, urging his nation to adopt American-style democracy. Returning to his farm in Iowa, Harrison lived in a relative retirement until he was nominated for presidency in 1836. Defeated, he retired again to his farm. He was elected president in 1840 and died in April 1841, a month after taking office. A month. That's a ridiculous amount.
That's a short time.
What can you do in a month?
I mean, I guess you could probably redecorate your office if you didn't like what the previous president had done with it. I mean, I would have accomplished that first thing. That's important to me.
That's like the most realistic goal you have as being president for only a year.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be cool. I don't know. I think it'd be cool to be president for a month, but then again, he did die, so it's not like he chose, oh, I'm going to be the shortest.
Like, this isn't for me. I'm going to check out.
I'm done with this. I'm good. No, it wasn't that kind. He died. But really, like, if you were to be president just for a month, what would you do, Alistair?
Me? Well, I'd probably establish the national food, and I would make it pizza. And I would demand pizza be served in every cafeteria across the United States at least 4 times a week. Sometimes free. I think you can never have enough pizza. That would be number one.
Yes, that's good. I like that. I like pizza a lot. And you can have various pizzas, so it's not...
Oh, yeah. I'd go all out. I'd offer, you know, kinds ranging from Hawaiian and... You know, I would try to hit the nationalities on all levels.
So each, like, state would have its own type of pizza. And it'd be available for, like, vegans and, like, vegetarians and, like...
I'd go for it all.
That's beautiful.
All those options.
And what else would you do in a month? Besides that, I mean, that might take, like, a day, realistically, if you're smart about it. Boom. It's out.
This is going to sound weird, but I would somehow import a lot of piglets for petting zoos. I love piglets. They're the cutest animal in the world. I would have them as, you know, stress relief centers where they bring dogs in before finals and stuff?
So you'd have pigs.
I'd have pigs.
That's pretty cool.
Because people like pigs.
They're cute. Like the pink ones. I mean, the other ones might scare people.
Yeah,
you know, like wild pigs.
Can you imagine a wild, like, hog roaming the schools before finals?
Actually, like, our senior year, you're supposed to, you know, have, like, a senior prank. And, I mean, we weren't allowed to do a senior prank, so we weren't about to do it. But, you know, you think about it. You think about it for a little bit. You're like, what could potentially be our senior prank if we were really up to it and willing to get in a lot of trouble? And we thought about getting four pigs and numbering them 1, 2, 3, and 5. So you're looking for 4 the whole entire time.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that.
And I'm like, that's genius. I totally want to do that. Like, there's no other thing I'd rather do in my life than just let go of some pigs or anything. Just number something and, like,
some
skip
geese.
A number. And yeah, and you have to find all of them. It's, like, messed up. So messed up.
Those teachers would be looking for hours. Little did they know
that there's no 4.
There's no 4. 4 is absent.
Well, it's nice to know that you have your priorities set if you were only president for a month. Like,
yeah, I feel like I could make some huge changes. I just don't see that happening in a month. I think I could do a lot of fun changes and bring some new cool things.
That makes
to
sense.
The United States of America in a month.
And that would
include pizza and pigs.
I mean,
pretty much.
You got the basics down, basically.
Exactly. Basically. What about you? What would you?
What would I do? I first would make soccer the national sport, and I would make sure that we have these youth clubs started.
Oh, nice.
Kind of like in Europe where they have, like, schools just for soccer. or football, as they say. And because it's my favorite sport, I want it to be the national sport. I wouldn't get rid of the other sports because that's not fair. You know, people, not everyone wants to play soccer. You know, I don't want to play football, so I'm not going to force other people to play.
Force other people, yeah.
Yeah, so that would be my first thing, definitely. I'd be like, this is what we need. We need more soccer. Get more people out there, you know, exercise. Get rid of obesity.
It's important, definitely. Having kids run out and be active.
Like, make it part of their education. Like, you're learning, but you're also during that time, like, when you have breaks. Like, I did ID camps for, like, college recruiting. And what you do is you go in for, like, a week or 3 days. Like, I did one for a week one time. And you basically, I mean, we didn't do schooling necessarily because it wasn't for school. But we did, we'd go into a room and watch tape and we discussed the tape and we'd look at film. Like, that's all we did. But you could put it in a school setting and be like, okay, we're going to wake up in the morning, play some soccer, go to class, learn something, lunch, go to soccer, class, you know, something like that.
Yeah, it's very educational. I think also the social aspect, having kids collectively just group together and participate in something, that would just...
Yeah.
You know, dynamically.
You learn a lot of things when you're with a team.
Yeah.
And it's like not just responsibility and teamwork. You learn a lot about yourself as well. Like what kind of player you are. Like, do I need someone to guide me? Do I need a coach to be there to
mentoring? Yeah, it's a
mentor,
big thing.
Or can I motivate myself? Am I like kind of like, do I need to play a sport, like a individual sport where it's all about me, or do I need a team? So I think it's important. And I love soccer so much. And I only have a month in presidency, so I might as well just do something I love.
Just might as well. Exactly.
Kind of like the pizza thing. Probably my second thing.
Exactly.
Straight to pizza. Always.
No, pizza. Pizza for life.
Pizza for life. Well, I have some fun facts about William Henry Harrison.
Shoot them at me.
Oh, yeah. So Harrison often referred to himself as a son of the Revolution. He was born 2 years before the American Revolution started, and his father, a three-term governor of Virginia, signed the Declaration of Independence. Harrison later used this experience as part of his campaign. So, basically, he referred himself as son of the Revolution. I'm actually a daughter of the Revolution. So that means that I have someone way down in the line actually participated in the Revolutionary War. It's kind of cool. I definitely think I have like a little like sign thing that says that I'm a daughter of the Revolution.
One of those plaques. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
It's kind of cool to know that one side of my family was here for a very long time, because the other side of my family immigrated from one side immigrated from Scotland, so that's why they participated in the Revolutionary War. But the other side immigrated later on, like in the 1900s. So it's kind of different and kind of cool to be like, yeah, we are kind of here.
I have some history here.
Yeah. Woo. Some more fun facts?
Yeah, of course.
His father wanted him to be a doctor. As the youngest son, Harrison wasn't set to inherit any of the family's wealth. The family estates was passed on to the oldest male inherit, so his brother. Instead, his father sent young William to Philadelphia to study medicine under a renowned physician. However, when his father died, Harrison quickly ran out of money and left Philadelphia for a more lucrative and exciting future. So it's good that he decided he didn't want to be a doctor. He became president for a month.
He became president.
For a month.
For a month. I still think that's significant. Like, if I went home and told my family that I was president for a month, they'd be happy. Like,
I'd be happy
for
you.
They'd be pretty awestruck.
I'd be like, yeah, I know that kid. I know that kid right up there, and he is presidente.
Presidente.
That's
the best way to put it. That's the best.
Yeah. So, when he did decide he didn't want to be a doctor, he ran away to join the army. Always seeking a life of adventure, William Henry Harrison quickly enlisted and rose through the ranks in the United States Army. In 1795, he took over control of Fort Washington, located near Cincinnati, and soon afterwards married young Anna Symes, much to her father's dismay.
Oh no, turmoil.
Ooh, turmoil in the family. It sounds like a classic, like, book, like, or movies, like a book or a movie plot. Like, I don't like his, I don't like him, and you married him. Kind of one of those things.
Disdainful. All those words that they use.
Like, you're married to him? No, you dishonor our family. That sounds like...
And then the classic woman is like, I'm going to do what I need to do to be happy. And she runs away from her family, you know.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Sounds about right.
It sounds like a good story. Harrison was also a well-known Indian fighter. So we did have our wars against the Indians. And a lot of the presidents. I mean, the presidents during that era did participate in fighting the Indians. And as a territorial governor, because he was, one of his responsibilities was to negotiate with the local natives of land treaties. One issue that arose was the Tecumseh War. And he was a leader, and he resented Harrison's Treaty of Fort Wayne and wanted it revoked. Negotiation quickly fell flat, and Harrison marched against the Confederacy of Natives under the pretense of seeking peace. At Prophet's Town, Tinsicum's Confederacy preemptively struck at dawn, and Harrison, rallying his troops, led his men to a rousing victory, which the American raised the settlement. At the time, many saw the victory as a critical blow to native morale and the end of Tinkinsum power. And Harrison was nicknamed Old Tippecanoe after the river located nearby. Popular memory of Harrison's actions during the battle helped his future political campaign. So the fact that he was a good military man, even though we were fighting the natives, not necessarily a good thing, we're kicking them off their land. He was a good fighter, and I love his nickname, Old Tippecanoe.
Can you imagine walking around with a nickname like that, Old Tippecanoe?
Hey guys, you want to know my nickname? Old Tippecanoe.
Old Tippecanoe.
Your friends just coming up to you, oh, hey, Old Tippecanoe. It'd be great.
It's great,
I want to be named after a river, like my nickname, Old Tippecanoe. It's just a cool, I don't know why it's so fascinating.
It's hip. It's hip. It's trendy. It's. I would walk around with that name proudly.
Proudly, Tippecanoe.
Tippecanoe.
What if I started calling you Tippecanoe? I don't know. I like Alistair too much. I don't think I could like nickname you Tippecanoe. So, after the Battle of Tippecanoe, Harrison thought his political career was over. Harrison certainly enjoyed the spoils of his celebrity, taking a long tour of the East and resigning once again for the military duty. After trying to his home, Harrison spent nearly 25 years seeking political office, all mostly unsuccessfully. Failed campaigns included bids for Secretary of State, Governor of Iowa, and two U.S. Senate seats. He did serve one term as a representative from Iowa and spent some time in the state house. After Harrison spent a brief tenure as an ambassador to Colombia, President Jackson decommissioned him upon election, and William was reduced to a county clerk. So he wasn't too successful with his political career.
What a roller coaster.
That seems, maybe it kind of ties into the fact that he only was president for a month. Maybe he needed to only be president. Like, he needed that success to come sometime. Yeah. And that was his time to shine, and he got it. And good for him. He finally, like, his political career was bloom. It's sad that he died, but, I mean.
I think that, like, leaders are born naturally. I think that if you're not having success, and you're not moving forward, and you're not getting into things and inspiring people in the way that you should be, maybe this isn't the right thing for you.
That makes sense.
You know?
It's kind of like, let the world do its thing. Kind of like, it's a circle. Kind of like,
yeah.
Let the flow go.
Let the flow go, man.
Just let the flow go. Harrison's, now that we're talking about this political, you know, mojo, Harrison's campaign platform has been used repeatedly The Whig Party, who championed Harrison as a common frontiersman, unknowingly set the platform for many other politicians' campaigns. Although Harrison came from a well-established Virginian family, his campaign painted him as a hard drinker, hard-working Indian fighter who had settlers' best interest at heart. Future presidents as Theodore Roosevelt, Abraham Lincoln, and George W. Bush used similar tactics to appeal to the blue-collar workers, although they too enjoyed the finery of aristocratic status. Does that make sense? You had to appeal to the audience, the people that
your demographic,
need to get. You need to get their vote, so you have to appeal to what is around you. Kind of like what Obama did. He appealed to the Hispanic people by starting to work on some immigration laws.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's done much with it, but he definitely appealed at first and was like, hey, blah, 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 blah. Rallied their votes.
Yeah,
so
it's recognizing that there is an issue and addressing it. That's the first step in getting votes. It establishes confidence, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, he was like, blah, 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 this is what I do. And even though he is, you know, he's not living their kind of life status, you have a sense that he's with you. He's one of us. It puts you at the same level with him. So you feel comfortable you want someone who you feel comfortable to kind of be powerful. You want to be kind of chill with them.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't think I'm like chill with Obama. Like if I like saw him, be like, yo, Obama. I'd probably be a little scared and be like, oh, it's Obama. Like, where's like the CIA, the FBI, the Secret Service? Like, am I going to get like run down? Am I too close to him? Like, I'd start like freaking up ever. Like, ugh. I'd be really scared and I wouldn't know what to do realistically.
I would think that I had been transported into this dreamlike state where I just became the most famous person in the world meeting Obama. Who am I?
Five.
You know? High five, fist pump, buddy.
Kind of like that. Do you watch Key and Peele?
I don't.
Oh, I love Key and Peele, and they do a perfect job with when they impersonate Obama.
Yeah.
And there's this one episode where he's impersonating Obama, and he just finished his speech, and he's going up to shake people's hands and, you know, kiss babies and, like, you know, the typical when he leaves.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the public, you need, you know, the audience, and he's going to the first he goes to these white people and he's just shaking their hands, and then he gets to these African-American black people and he's just like, let's go, homie, yeah, like my homie.
There's a sense of brotherhood, you know.
Yeah, that it basically is what they were making fun of Obama for. And he's like, yeah, bring it in. And stuff like that. I imagine you doing that, like being like, Obama,
Obama,
do the nay nay. You'd be like,
you know,
hit
that's
it with
me.
The whip. Hit it with the whip. Hit it. You'd just be like singing and be like, nay nay.
I'd get that party pumping so hard.
You'd be like, hands in the air, Macarena. You'd be like, just let's dance, Obama. That's how I imagine you meeting any president.
Like, Obama, let's
Obama.
Tear up this dance floor right now.
let's
show people
go.
How to shake. Exactly.
Exactly. Like, what else would you want to do with Obama? Like, talk about political things? How to change
no,
the world?
No, I would not want to talk about political
no,
things
not,
with Obama.
No, whatsoever. Like, it's
he's
not,
got that covered, and he has agents he can talk to about that. I'm going to hit it up hard, and I'm going to play pool with him. And
that makes sense.
You know, take a dip in the pool, some sauna, maybe.
Ooh, it's hot like a sauna in here.
That's what I'm going for. That's the mood I'm going for.
That's good. I have one more fact before we're going to take a break.
Yes.
Harrison gave the longest inaugural speech ever. At over 2 hours in length, you can be sure that many attendees were glad when it was over.
Yeah.
2 hours.
2 hours.
I believe it's an hour now, somewhere around an hour, a little more than an hour. I'm not sure. I've listened to a couple, but I don't really time it. And I've actually read more than I've actually listened to them. But that sounds very long and very painful to go through that, especially because it's like, little do they know he's only going to be president for a month.
For a month. You'd have to be very passionate and very interested in politics to be able to withstand a 2-hour speech like that.
Yeah, that's for
I mean, if I were thrust in that kind of environment, I would fall over within the first 20 minutes.
Be like, oh, okay, this
that's
is
not
fun.
For me. Yes.
It's all right. So we're going to take a break right now, but stay tuned in. I'm with Alistair, and I'm DJ Freak, and this is Oval Hour, and this is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
Story ain't no werewolf trying to steal you away. I'll be your A-list leading man on the moon, cause me and you out of space. I'm talking about starting out as friends. I'm talking about reeling out the 10. I'm talking about rules of a lifetime. You and I can even write the end. Yeah, here comes that movie scene, one you hate, so cliche.
This is DJ Freak, and this is Oval Hour, and today my guest is Alistair. And before the break, we were talking about William Henry Harrison.
He was that spunky guy.
He was. That 1 month, very successful.
That 1 month was probably so precious and so monumental. Shout out to him for it, him and his hard work.
Definitely, definitely. 1 month. It's an accomplishment just to be president, and no matter how short it is, it's still an accomplishment, and you still, like, he's still famous. You learn about him in class. Everyone knows who he is. Okay, maybe not everyone, but you have to learn him as a president.
No, the general public definitely knows who he is.
Yeah, you know he's a president. If you don't know he's a president, that's a little bit of a problem. If you don't know what he did, that's okay. Like,
that's okay.
That's okay. That's all right. That's not too bad. Just remember, he was an Indian.
Just as
fighter.
Long as you know that he ran our country for a solid month, you're fine.
You're
fine.
That's all you really need. And we have some shout outs to my favorite family out there. Alistair's family is listening. Shout out to Bree, too. Shout out to maybe Stu, maybe Leona, and shout out to Taylor always, because she might not be listening, but she has listened to the majority of my shows, and I really appreciate it. I have a fan out there, and I love it, and I hope you continue to tune in. I have a couple more shows, and we're going to keep going with the show today with Taylor, some trivia.
Taylor, I also brought you a cookie from the event that you can pick up later.
Okay.
Continue, DJ Freak.
So, are you ready for some trivia?
I'm ready for some trivia.
Okay. The first question. Which president renamed the presidential weekend retreat Camp David in honor of his grandson? If I can also give you, like, three answers you can choose from, but you're a pretty smart dude. So, like, I'll give you, a couple seconds to think about it if you can't think about it.
Okay, can you repeat the question one more time?
That's fine. Which president renamed the presidential weekend retreat Camp David in honor of his grandson?
I'm going to take a wild stab at this and go with Thomas Jefferson.
No. I'll give you three choices, okay?
Yeah.
Zachary Taylor, Dwight D. Eisenhower, Rutherford B. Hayes. Those are your three options.
I'm going to go with Eisenhower.
Yes, that's right. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you ready for the next one?
I'm ready.
Which president appeared in the movie A Turkey for President long before taking up residency at the White House? You're like,
oh, my.
I don't know.
Oh, my. Like, I know that movie so well.
Do you want me to give you
three.
FDR, TR, Ronald Reagan.
I'll go with Reagan on this one.
Yes, Reagan was an actor. Boom, boom. There you go. That's two for two, realistically, because there are options. So are you ready for the next one?
Right, I'm going to try no options on this one.
No options on this one? Okay. Which president was so obsessed with the news that he held a transistor radio to his ear wherever he walked and had three television sets in his bedroom and office so he could watch the evening news on three networks at once?
Oh,
this is a tough one. You really shouldn't have said you didn't want help on this one.
Can I guess once and then get options?
Of course.
What about Jimmy Carter?
No. I feel like that's a good guess, though.
I feel like that's a good guess.
Something about Jimmy Carter. Just something about
him. I was like, I don't know. I felt he had me feeling some type of way.
That's for sure. Always. Always Jimmy. JFK, Lyndon B. Johnson, Richard M. Nixon.
I'm going to go with Johnson in the middle.
Yes. Oh, you're really good when you have these multiple choices. I mean, it makes it, you know, it's kind of hard just to be like, boom. Like
no, like, I don't know who Johnson is. I never would have guessed that.
Lyndon B. Johnson? Okay, that's all right. Okay, we'll keep going.
Yeah, it just comes to show how much I know about our presidency.
American education. It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Thank you. Thank you for that recognition that it's not my fault.
Yeah. Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Which was the only president elected unanimously? This is a good one. I remember getting this all the time.
What about Lincoln?
Think about it a little bit harder.
Think about it.
Unanimously. No?
Jackson?
No. Do you want me to help you out?
I would love some help.
JFK, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington.
Okay, well, it's not Lincoln.
Head. I believe in you, Alistair. I have lots of.
I'm gonna go with JFK.
No.
Ah, oh, dang.
George Washington elected unanimously. That means there was no electing, so it has to be George Washington because there was no process of electing a president. It's a hard question. A lot of people get it wrong. I remember it was one of our like pop quizzes, and a majority of class got it wrong. Because it's not like you have to think about it.
You poor thing. You were put through that.
Yes. Oh, I got my. It right. Cause it
well, of makes course sense you did.
In my head. But, you know, a lot of people, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And it's not their fault. Maybe it is.
Maybe it is.
I'm just kidding. Okay, are you ready for the last one?
Last one. Bring it.
Actually, there's two more. I lied.
There's two more? That's fine.
Which president was a geologist? If you listen to my shows, you know what this answer is. But, you know. My shows at... There's podcasts at radio.dominican.edu. You can listen to your fellow penguins.
I wish I could... go back and just take a hit of those podcasts before this question.
Do you want some help?
I'd love some help.
Okay. Hoover, Lincoln, Coolidge. I believe in you. I have hope.
Hoover?
Yeah. Ooh. Hit it with a nay-nay. Okay. Last question.
Last one.
For reals.
For realsies.
Which president liked cucumbers soaked in vinegar for breakfast? This is the weirdest question I've ever asked anyone.
It's also a beautiful question because I could see myself eating cucumbers soaked in vinegar
I
for breakfast
I see you
every
doing
morning.
That, actually.
I could do that. I could pull that one off. Now I'm just trying to think of the president that's most like me. So let's see. I'm handsome and beautiful and smart. So it'd have to be...
Of course.
It'd have to be... Let's go with...
I'd be surprised if you guessed this. There's so many presidents.
There's so many presidents.
Like a wacky one, I guess.
A wacky one.
Maybe. I don't know. It depends on you. I don't... I'm looking at this answer, and I'm... He doesn't, like, ring a bell as wacky. He seems pretty normal.
He seems pretty straight up.
Yeah, basically.
I'm going to go out on the biggest limb I've ever gone out on in my life. And
out
go
on
with
ever.
Obama.
Obama? No. No. You want to try again?
I'm going to try one more time.
Okay.
Let's go with... I've guessed... Is it one that I've guessed already?
No.
No? Okay. I need some help. Dang it.
Okay.
I can't think of any.
Ulysses S. Grant, James Garfield, Woodrow Wilson. One of those three. One of them reminds me of you, but it's not the correct answer.
What was the middle one again?
James Garfield.
Garfield.
You know. I believe in you.
You know, Grant, being the beautiful general that he was... I don't see him eating beautifully cut cucumbers dipped and soaked in vinegar for breakfast every morning. I see that more of a Wilson thing. I'm going to go with Wilson.
No, no, it's your first one wrong. No. Why'd you get this wrong? Why? It's the first one. It's Ulysses S. Grant.
So I pretty much negated Grant first off, and it was him.
Yeah. I wasn't going to stop you.
I don't know what I was thinking there.
That's it, right?
I mean, cucumbers and vinegar, that's a pretty hearty food.
It's like a weird combo. I don't know if I really enjoy that too much. But, I mean, everyone has their different tastes.
I think we should try it one time.
You think we should try it?
I think we should go out and just cultivate some cucumbers and ferment our own vinegar.
I don't know if he fermented them. He just soaked them. So maybe he enjoyed, like, this. The like. It's kind of like a dipping sauce going on.
Something like that, yeah. Hors d'oeuvres.
I mean, it's almost like pickles.
Ooh.
I mean, but not really. Maybe. I'm not sure. But, I mean, we have to keep moving on.
Yeah.
And I'd love to keep talking about him, but I also have other presidents I need to talk about.
You know. Go for it.
You know, are you ready for some James K. Polk?
I'm ready for Polk.
Yeah,
Bring
we are.
The Polk.
He was the 11th president of the United States. From 1845 to 1849. Polk was born in North Carolina. He later lived in and represented Tennessee. A Democrat, Polk served as the 17th Speaker of the House of Representatives from 1835 to 1839 and Governor of Tennessee from 1839 to 1841. Polk was the surprise dark horse candidate for president in 1844, defeating Henry Clay of the rival Whig Party by promising to annex Texas. Polk was a leader of the Jacksonian democracy during the second party system. Polk was the last strong pre-Civil War president, and he is the earliest of whom they are surviving photographs taken during a term in office. He is noted for his foreign policy successes. He threatened war with Britain over the issue of which nation owned the Oregon country, then backed away and split the ownership of the region with Britain. When Mexico rejected American annexation of Texas, Polk led the nation to a sweeping victory in the Mexican-American War, which gave the United States most of its present Southwest. He secured passage of the Walker Tariff of 1846, which had low rates that pleased his native South, and he established a treasury system that lasted until 1913. Polk oversaw the opening of the U.S. Naval Academy and the Smithsonian Institution, the groundbreaking from the Washington Monument, and the institution of the first postage stamps in the United States. He promised to serve only one term and did not run for re-election. He died from cholera 3 months later after his term ended. Scholars have ranked him favorable in the list of the greatest presidents for his ability to set an agenda and achieve all of it. Polk has been called the least known consequential president in the United States. So Polk, I actually really enjoy Polk. Whenever I talk about him, people don't really know what I'm talking about. And as he said, he's one of the least known consequential presidents.
Yeah.
Because he did what he said he was going to do. He was going to run one term, no re-election, and he did what he was going to do. And that's not very common. You don't find that anymore, that people keep their promise and do what they say they're going to do. And Polk did it. And I mean, I know majority of the time when I look at the presidents, they tell me that the president was ranked as one of the blah, blah, blah. So every president is ranked as something like, oh, he was the best military, blah, blah, blah. He's a top 10. He's one of the top presidents. Like, that doesn't give me any, like, top 44 presidents?
Top 44, top 42? Like...
I said 44. That's not right. It's 42.
42. 42. It's close enough, though. I mean, not really,
close.
Actually.
Obviously.
He has a groovy name, too. Polk.
James Knox Polk. Yeah. That's a pretty cool name. The only other president which name is better than that is James Buchanan. Buchanan is just kind of like a cool Buchanan. Like the way it comes out of your mouth.
It's snippy.
Buchanan.
I don't know.
Buchanan. And like if you think of, like whenever I think about it, I can't really like visualize that word. Like if I had to write that and had no clue how to spell Buchanan.
I know what you mean. Like I know there's a few silent H's in there.
I'm just not sure how I'd write that. Like, it's not like phonetical. Mm-hmm. There's no like. I'd struggle so hard.
It's one of those words that you can try to sound out, but it's just it's not going to get you very far.
That's for sure. Definitely not.
Buchanan.
Polk though.
Polk.
You might like maybe.
You can actually hear the L in that.
Polk. Polk.
Polk.
Yeah, Polk. You might be a little confused by the Polk. Polk. Well, I have some fun facts about him.
Give me some fun facts
Obviously.
About him.
They're fun to me, maybe not fun to you, but fun to me.
I will find anything about Polk fun.
That's
so
good. You do the polka dance.
Polka dance. I will do that.
Hokey pokey.
I will do that right after the show.
You better, because I'm excited now. Definitely. I'm really excited.
Okay, good. Hit me with those facts.
So, Polk was born in North Carolina and raised in Tennessee. He suffered lifelong health issues. Polk's family left North Carolina to seek their fortune as plantation owners in Tennessee. Growing up in a successful plantation, Polk was constantly afflicted with gallstones and other ailments. Left physically weak as a child, Polk turned his determination towards studying and learning in his order to excel. So it's actually kind of weird, because normally... not weird, okay, Polk's not weird. because he excelled in, you know, studies. And
yeah.
Because he was weak. But normally you think about presidents as being strong, and a president has like a athletic career behind them, or they were a farmer, or
something sturdy.
You know, like something sturdy.
Sturdy's the word.
Especially back then, you wanted like someone that could support you. It kind of was like your, I don't know, in my head, like you wanted an ideal man. You wanted someone that could support you, be strong, know how to run their country.
You wanted people that know how to do things. You want people that are handy, that are knowledgeable, that can work a tractor, you know, like
someone, like you.
Someone tough.
It sounds like you, Alistair. You could totally work that tractor.
I could work a tractor, I think. I could pull it off. Maybe I'll become the president of the United States.
I believe
in my tractor ability.
In your purely tractor ability. That is your campaign.
That could become like my slogan somehow.
Yeah.
Like, come take a ride on my tractor ride, and I'll ride you to a beautifully and sculpted American dream. Something along those lines. I'd have to work on it.
That sounds about right. That's what I want.
Like, I would hop on that tractor if that was a slogan of somebody's.
Sounds perfect.
It's perfect.
So you should just remember that. Keep it in the back of your mind. But, you know, Polk was all about schooling. And he started formal schooling at the age of 18 and was accepted into the University of North Carolina only 3 years later. So that's pretty cool if he started school at, like, formal, like, I mean, he probably, you know, got taught at home. Formal schooling and then only 3 years later, it's pretty cool.
Pretty intelligible.
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 Polk's work ethic paid off. He started formal lessons at a school near Murfreesboro in 1813 and was accepted to college in 1816. Studying law under Martin Van Buren's attorney general, Polk passed the bar in 1820 and went on to work for Tennessee's state senate. So he's a smart dude, man. He also, Polk's rise to political power was swift. While studying law, Polk worked as a state senator clerk. Soon after, Polk gained a seat in the Tennessee House of Representatives, which he held for 2 years. In 1825, Polk advanced to the U.S. House, eventually becoming Speaker of the House. In 1839, Polk returned home as the newly elected governor of Tennessee. So he's just moving up there.
He escalated pretty fast.
Like 0 to 100 real quick.
Real quick.
Whole squad.
That just shows the determination. That shows some kind of fire, some kind of contrast to what we heard about the president we talked about first.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. He didn't, you know, very unsuccessful, and he did keep trying, though.
No.
But he has been successful.
Was there.
Yeah, I definitely understand what you're trying to say. It definitely makes sense that Polk had this desire, and he needed it. He was going out there. It kind of seemed like Harrison was, you know, he was out there trying, and he kept trying. And was unsuccessful, but he didn't try hard enough. But, I mean, he tried hard enough to get the presidency, and he was only there for a month. I mean, obviously, he didn't think he was going to be there for a month, but he was retired. He was retired and came out of retirement to do this. So, you know, there's a different thing going on there. So, Polk's rise abruptly stopped after his first term as governor due to a poor economic and a clever Whig platform, Polk lost his next two re-election bids and quit politics for a country life. So he's going towards a Harrison thing around here. With his wife's support and social cunning, Polk eventually gained Martin Van Buren's endorsement for the candidacy in 1844 election. So it kind of seems like he had a small version of what happened to Harrison.
Yeah.
And it happened to him. So, I mean, it happens once in a while. Okay, so Harrison's nickname was Old Tippecanoe.
Old Tippecanoe.
Do you know what James K. Polk's nickname was?
Superhero?
No. It's so random, but no.
Nope. I would not know the first. I don't have a single clue.
Oh, you ready?
I'm ready for it.
His nickname was Young Hickory. Do you know why?
Maybe he liked hickory.
No. Close. No, that wasn't it. Close.
It's close, though.
Due to his support for Andrew Jackson during his political rise.
That makes sense now. I get you.
Supported Andrew Jackson and thus benefited from Jackson's popularity the congressional election of the mid-1800s. Jackson rewarded Polk for his staunch support, and peers labeled Polk a young hickory, and as Jackson's fortune fell due to the national recession, so did Polk's, at least as a Tennessee governor.
Yeah.
So that it makes sense, complete sense. I think it's a funny kind of nickname.
The correlation's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some more cool things. We talked about Harrison's inaugural speech and how it was uber long. Polk was the first president to have his inaugural speech reported over telegram. That sounds so technological.
That's a huge advancement.
For them, like, it sounds so cool. Invented in America by James Morse in 1832, the electric telegraph caught like wildfire across the nation, replacing older forms of relaying messages. Because of the technology, the news of Polk's inaugural was able to transmit across the country much more quickly than previous inaugurations. So that's really cool. I think that's cool. It's always fun and interesting to know that a president, like, different steps in history and how presidents intertwine with the culture and how technology affected everything. It's just history. Like, history. I love history so much. Like, it just matters. Like, if that wasn't there, no one would have ever seen it.
Yeah.
Not seen it. They didn't see
it. Not seen it, but and not quite experienced it either, but
it's just a different
it's a different perspective, for sure.
It's like if now we had like a telegraph, a hologram thing now, like,
oh yeah,
you
yeah,
just not physically see Obama, but like kind of like the Tupac thing where they hologram Tupac singing. It's like if we did that to Obama and we put him in like in the middle of our room, like, like Obama's right there.
He's
man,
right there, right, I can there, almost touch him. Yes, I know what you mean.
So, along with history, James Polk also presided over the Mexican-American War. After Texas was annexed by the United States, border disputes between the new state and Mexico plagued both countries. Mexican citizens considered Texas a stolen province. After Mexican troops moved into Texas, war was officially declared in mid-1846. The Mexican government, which was in a state of upheaval, couldn't defend itself well against the American military. Many important American political figures were involved in the war, from Abraham Lincoln with his vocal opposition to Zachary Taylor's strong leadership on the battlefield. In late 1847, the American army captured Mexico City, while many politicians in Washington clamored for annexation of the entire country. The Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was finalized in February of 1848, and the Americas gave much of the current Southwest, California, Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, Nevada, and parts of Colorado. So that's, I think it's always history once again, how every president has the culture, the background of what was not just happening domestically, but foreignly, and it's interesting war happening for presidents and how presidents are affected by the war, what they do, how it puts an impact in their life. Mexican-American War, James K. Polk, you know, a little thing on him.
That's definitely one of like the biggest assets to a president, I think, is being culturally and being worldly, being able to kind of form connections and form relationships between places. Being able to kind of recognize where maybe some of those harmonies aren't working out, adjusting if necessary, kind of, and then getting involved in it and making movements in it and becoming part of it. You know, that's, I think taking that step, that makes for a president that knows what he's doing, what he or she is doing, and taking action into it.
it's a huge part of history now. We would not, the Mexican-American War didn't happen. We wouldn't have these states. If he wasn't so harsh and to the point, probably if we went back then, it seemed all right. Like, oh, let's just take their land. It was a thing then. You're trying to get land.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what you fought for. You fought for land. You fought for your country. You fought for the Civil War. You technically were fighting for your rights.
Yeah.
But in the same time, it was a land issue.
A lot of it was definitely expansion oriented.
Yeah.
How much could I get, and how can I take over my neighbor, you know?
How do we get the states become a union, and that's more land? So it's definitely, wars are very important, and James K. Polk is definitely, you don't really learn about too much about him.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember learning a whole lot
about him. I did not learn that much about him.
I think the only other fact that I remember learning is that he guaranteed his slaves freedom upon his wife's death. And he trusted his wife deeply, and he depended on her throughout his career, and often went to her for political advice. And upon his death, Polk left instructions for his numerous slaves to be freed after his wife died in an event that occurred 40 years later. So I remember learning that in class because it was kind of like a silly fact. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Why would you not free your state of slaves like then and there? Like, why does it have to be when your wife dies?
When your wife, so
it doesn't necessarily make any sense. But
yeah,
who really knows what was going on in his head?
He was doing his own thing. He had his own, you know.
He was doing himself.
He's like, doing him.
You do you, man. You do you. So I have some more trivia questions.
Okay.
Before we wrap up this session.
Yes.
Are you ready? You did pretty well last time.
That's good. That's encouraging.
You only got one wrong.
Yeah.
No, you got.
I think I got two.
You got two got wrong. Two. You got the George Washington and the pickle. Were they pickles? No, cucumbers.
Yeah, that was Grant.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Which president bathed his feet daily in ice cold water, believing that this would prevent colds? Just tell me if you need a.
Quincy Adams.
No.
Okay. Some help would be fantastic.
T.J., James K. Polk, John Adams.
I'll go with Polk. No. He seems like a well-educated man.
It's T.J.
T.J.
Thomas Jefferson. It's okay. That's just one. You have a couple more. Don't worry. Which two presidents died on the same day? July 4th, 1826.
My birthday.
The 50th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. George Washington and John Adams. John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson and John Quincy Adams.
I don't think George Washington died on July 4th. And okay. I don't know why. I just don't think he did.
You just don't.
I'm going to go with the last pair, Thomas Jefferson and John Quincy Adams.
No, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson.
I was like, I know it's not Washington.
That's good. You eliminated one.
I eliminated one. Yeah.
It's okay. Next question. Which president was the first to be born as an American citizen? Previous presidents began life as British subjects. So, you know, they weren't born technically in America, and it wasn't America yet. Do you need some help? That's a hard one. I mean, you have to go back to, you know, kind of past. Martin Van Buren, William Henry Harrison, Andrew Jackson.
Can you repeat the list of three?
Martin Van Buren, William Henry Harrison, Andrew Jackson. It's a hard question.
I just, like, don't know the first thing about these. I'm going to go with... I'll go with Harrison.
No.
I'm doing so bad.
It's all right. You did really well the first time. It's Martin Van Buren.
I was like, I could go for for the one president that I do not know the name of, but it seemed too obvious.
Yeah, you don't want to get too obvious.
Yeah.
Okay, last question.
Last one.
Let's go, Alistair. Which president was such a football star in college that two professional teams offered him contracts? JFK, General Ford, Bill Clinton. If you're listening to my show, you know what the answer is, but, you know, it's okay if you weren't.
Oh, my God. Ford?
Yes, it was Ford.
Oh, I got one.
I believe it was the Packers and the Detroit Lions. I might be wrong on the Packers, but I definitely know it was Detroit Lions. For sure. Like, precisual.
Precisual. That's a good word.
So, Alistair, our time is almost up, and how did you enjoy being on my show? Talking about presidents. It's a tough topic. Not too many
ones. It's a tough topic. I loved it, though. I really loved it. The trivia was awesome. The facts were fascinating. DJ Freak, you're also kind of a star on the radio.
Thank you. Well, thank you for tuning in today. I'm DJ Freak, and my guest today was Alistair, and this is Oval Hour, and this is Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Tune in next time, Wednesdays, 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. I'm not bad, bad.